morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is
my cousin Tino right here. Yes, sir. We got a good show today.
And Gary LeMaster.
Good morning.
Well, we're in a situation where the majority of voters, or the greatest number of voters, however you want to phrase it, if you want to be exact, are voting Democratic, voted for Hillary Clinton. The greatest number of voters voted for a Democratic Senate.
Are you suggesting we don't live in a democracy?
Right. We're underrepresented. So for the first time in a long time, the Republicans got some more votes for the House of Representatives people than Democrats did. But the representation is still way out of whack. So there's a new document out. It's called Indivisible, A Practical Guide to Resisting the Trump Agenda. And it's been drawn up by a group of, I think, fairly young congressional staffers and former staffers as a way to resist the Trump agenda. It has a lot of different points, but what we're going to do is talk about it. Mostly, folks, we talk about policy here. You know, let's not invade Iran, let's do this or that, or let's treat immigrants fairly, and so forth and so on. But this is a sort of how-to, this is sort of tactics we'll be talking about today. And this particular group of people came up with a series of tactics based on how the Tea Party behaved. And as Gary was saying before the show, the Tea Party got its tactics from a left-wing political organizer, right, Gary?
Saul Alinsky. You know, remember how they kept accusing the Obama people of being, you know, subscribers to Saul Alinsky? Well, what the Tea Party did was right out of the book, chapter, and verse of Saul Alinsky's strategies.
I remember when we tried to do one of the state representatives' book on the Constitution, there was just, we were going to criticize it and say, you know, here's this. There's nothing in it about the Constitution. It was about how to organize Tea Party resistance to anything that Obama wanted. So these folks feel, and I think that they're, you know, they're centered in Washington, come from all over the country, obviously. I mean, I think it's people that misunderstand that Washington is filled with people from rural areas, small cities, towns, from every state in the union. I mean, so are most of the big cities, New York, Chicago. It's filled with people from everywhere. It's not like some little group of people that just happen to be born there.
Those elites.
It's not some elite. It's just whoever wants to do this. We're going to start, and I think we're going to ask Gary to do the hard lifting to get this thing off the ground.
Now we're in trouble.
There's several takeaways. Let me just one of the takeaways is, is they're entirely focused on defense. Their argument is the Republicans control the presidency, the House, and the Senate. No matter how wonderful your progressive agenda is, no matter how great your ideas, no matter how loving are about America, it's not going to happen. What has to be done, the focus has to be done on stopping Donald Trump.
And I think what we should start out by talking about what's at stake.
Well, yeah. First let's talk about Donald Trump is the biggest popular vote loser in history to ever call himself president-elect. You understand? He's the biggest vote loser. He has no mandate, and yet he talks about because he has no mandate, he's going to tell you he has a mandate. In every tweet, in every speech, he talks about his mandate. He has none. The biggest popular vote loser in the history of presidential elections.
I think it's a good point. I think that we're dealing with an extremely skillful but very flaky demagogue. And I think it's going to be, you know, what we keep saying, folks, is, and I think that Mike and Gary agree with me on this, we really don't know what's going to happen because Trump is very unpredictable as a person. He has appointed an extremely right-wing, anti-everything cabinet. So we can see what he's actually doing at the cabinet level, and that'll be a little bit more predictable. When we see somebody who hates the EPA appointed to be head of the EPA, we know that they want to dismantle the clean air and other other rules. So, Gary, this is about tactics, right? Indivisible.
Well, I just want to talk about, you know, I think we do know exactly what they're going to try to do, because we have a majority Republican Congress on both houses that have been putting forward bills for 8 years that have been vetoed by President Obama for 8 years and or 6 years actually.
6 years.
And so on their agenda are things like repealing but not replacing the Affordable Care Act. Privatizing.
Which seems very, very difficult to do. And the new estimate, it will cost $1 trillion to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
It's exceedingly complicated. Privatizing Medicare and Medicaid, privatizing Social Security.
The VA.
VA.
How can we make the VA worse? I know. Let's privatize it.
Defund Planned Parenthood. Appoint a... Supreme Court justices to overturn Roe v. Wade, sell off or give away public lands, do away with the Endangered Species Act, do away with most EPA regulations, deny climate change and undo the Paris Accords, undo Dodd-Frank and the Wall Street regulations, go back to a trickle-down economy, on steroids, privatize education, increase defense spending, and further suppress votes. Those are the things that are primary on their agenda.
There's the Republican agenda in the House and Senate, and there's the Trump agenda, and they're pretty similar, but there are conflicts. I mean, they tried to get rid of the ethics. Basically, there's a committee that's independent that watches congressional ethics because, as we all know, there's been some problems with money, et cetera, et cetera. But they tried to weaken it, and not only did the American people rise up and call and protest to their congressional representatives, but even Trump said, nah, you know, don't get rid of that. That's not what we should be doing. So there's going to be some interaction between the president and these hard right Republican majorities in the House of Representatives. And so as Democrats and as progressives and even as moderates, we're kind of completely we don't have any of the levers of power. Years ago, I looked at the situation in Iran when the Green Revolution was taking place. And the Iranian government had all the levers of power. It was impossible to see how people could do anything. They made a very brave resistance. But it in the end, it failed, although they've got a better president now. Now, the question is, I guess, is, and I forget the book. Is it Tolstoy? What is to be done? I mean, here we have... For those of us who are progressive or even moderate, we have this extraordinarily right-wing House and Senate. We have Republicans' control of the legislature, for example, in Arizona and the governorship. What can we do? It's going to be 2 years before there's an election. So what can be done? And that's what Indivisible asks.
One of the things I want to mention, on Gary's list was Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, the closest thing to my heart. And yet, I read somewhere, 42% of Republicans think they're different things, by the way. So one of the simple fixes to Obamacare is to pass the Affordable Care Act, because they think they're different things. The Republicans, I'm serious, they've been so inundated.
Oh, Mike,
they've been so inundated with lies. I'm sorry, I don't have the quote. I think it was Slate or Salon or something.
There are polls.
We actually believe you.
One of the magazines. I can't belabor this point too much. That to do a Republican thing. If we're sitting here taking our cues from the Tea Party, which is going to be the bulk of the show this morning.
It's about, tactics from the Tea Party.
And I got the chapter on tactics, bud. Yeah.
You got the hard chapter
no
on
problem.
Tactics.
I'm up for it. But I do want to direct people too. You can get your own copy of Indivisible. It's at many places on the web right now.
Yes, and there are many Indivisible groups forming all over the United States. We're not saying that this is a perfect document with perfect tactics, because these were young people who were working in Congress as aides and stuff. And I think they said every representatives have 7, 8, 9, 10 aides, maybe even more. Every senator has 30 of these aides, and they're the guys who get things done for the Senate. There's the support, and they're the people that you talk to when you call the office. And so one of the things that they want you to do right off is get engaged with whoever your congressional representative is. Call them and give your opinion. Just call them and give your opinion. But there's more to it. They want you to form groups, right, Gary?
Yeah, if we go down the summary, chapter one is how the grassroots advocacy worked to stop President Obama. And, you know, we are pretty clear on what happened with the Obama agenda. It was basically stopped in its tracks after the first 2 years. So, you know, the first part of that is a local strategy targeting individual members of Congress. And the important thing here is to know who your representatives are, and, you know, both in the House and the Senate, and find out where their district offices are or state offices, and get the phone numbers both local and national, both here and in Washington, D.C., And call them, write them. You know, it's far better to do that than to send emails or to tag on to a petition that somebody else has started.
The other point they make is, and I think the mic was going to make it before I stepped on, is that according to Indivisible, only talk to people who represent you. Don't waste time sending a letter to some guy in Wyoming, because you're not his constituent. You don't vote for him. An individual emphasizes that re-election is the topmost product of a thing on congressional people's mind. And congressmen and women have to run every 2 years, senators every 6 years, and the campaigns start almost immediately.
70% of their time is spent on re-election.
Right. And so what they want you to do is focus. So part of the Verde Valley is in, say, Gosar's district. The other part is in Tom O'Halloran. Sedona's in Tom O'Halloran. Cottonwood, and where you guys live, is in Gosar. So they want you to focus on your representative and your senator in your state, the people who are elected to represent you, and tell those people what you want.
In many cases, if you don't live in the district, you can't even email the representative
right
on their website. They ask
you lie about
they ask for your address, and if you're not in the district, it will cut you off.
When Hillary Clinton was a very successful senator in New York, she wouldn't take, and it's very responsive to any kind of contact with her. She wouldn't take anything if you didn't live in New York. If you lived in New Jersey, there was no way you could even send her an email.
Yeah, that's none of them.
I mean, it's kind of extreme, but that's what we're talking about.
I want to mention real quickly that this document that we're going to be talking from is geared toward, as we talked about before we went on the air, geared toward Congress or toward the federal government. All of this, as I look through it, can be applied to your state government.
All of this
can be applied to your county government. All of this can be applied to your local government. But especially we're concerned with the bad representation at the state level and the federal level.
And what the document is suggesting, and what we're suggesting, is that you're going to have to stand up. You can be a father, you can be a plumber, you can have many roles in life, you can be a part of a church or a part of any kind of social group. But you also have a hat where you're a citizen of the United States. And people have to step up, according to this document, as citizens of the United States, as part of an indivisible country, and take action to, in our case, stop the Trump and congressional thing in this track. So it's a defensive move.
I'm going to tell you those actions as soon as I get a chance.
Okay. Let me get through the summary first.
Yes, sir. Okay. Go ahead.
I just got started.
Yeah, yeah.
In chapter one, I talked about is focusing on your members of Congress, your representatives. It's they refer to it as a defensive approach, and the important point there is that you have to pick your battles and not just attack everything, but especially the things that are built on racism, authoritarianism, and corruption.
They want you to take and when you go and write your comments, they want you to do one thing at a time. So if you're unhappy with the immigration policy, you write about immigration. You don't write about the death penalty or Medicare. If you want to stop changes and privatization of Medicare, you have to focus laser-like on Medicare as an issue and contact your congressional people, even state people who don't vote directly on Medicare, have an impact on Medicaid.
And part of it is being proactive. It doesn't do you any good to complain after the fact. If you're concerned that they're going to take away Medicare or Social Security or whatever, you have to take your stand beforehand. Chapter 2 of this document talks about how your member of Congress thinks. And basically, you can sum it up in one word, re-election. It's re-election, re-election, re-election.
Not a great part of our system that as soon as you get elected, you have to rerun again, but that's the way it is.
Public funding would solve that, but that's another show.
The newly elected congressional members are already fundraising for their re-election.
Yes.
So it's...
And it's not like they're greedy. It's like they have to do it. The system is set up so they have to raise vast amount. There are occasional exceptions, but generally they have to raise a bunch of money and have to start right away.
You know, and it's the biggest turnoff to young people. I know Gary's in the middle of his list, but it's the biggest turnoff that they get excited, they want to get involved in politics, they want to see what it's all about, that they know that they can make a difference. They've listened to all this crap that we talk about all the time, and then the first thing that happens is somebody asking for money.
And the reason for it, that they have to be so focused on re-election is that freshman senators and freshman congressmen do not get anything done. They have no power. They're put on they're way down the list in committees. They have to work through their caucus and work through the senior members. They just have very little power. So it's important that they get re-elected. Chapter 3 of the document basically talks about organizing, identifying and organizing local groups. So, you know, there are lots of groups out there that think as you do. Find those groups. If none exist, it gives you details on how to create one or organize
one. Yeah, don't build a group if there's already a group that you can work with. But if there isn't a group that you can work with, it suggests you can build a group with as few as 10 people. You can get 10 of your friends together and form an indivisible group.
It's one of my pet peeves is that I really strongly believe in environmental causes, and we must have 20, 30 national or international environmental groups, and it would seem to have more power if they would all work together and focus. But anyway, so that's chapter 3. And chapter 4 provides four tactics that have been proven to work. And those include going to town halls and speaking up, listening to what the congressional members have to say, and then going with a list of questions and speaking up. Going to non-town hall events, ribbon cuttings, things of that sort, And by the way, in both cases, take along your cell phone or your camera or a video camera and record what's going on. Go to their district offices and request meetings with the representatives you know, if you are pretty certain they're there, don't be put off easily. You know, sit there and wait until you can speak with the representative.
And try to speak to the highest level representative you can get to. And the and Mike will go into this in more things, but it's part of it is not being so much aggressive, but it's fairly stubborn in getting your point across. I mean, you sit there until you and say, I'll wait for the person to come. And you sit there hoping the representative will show up or whatever's happening. And it gives you a bunch of techniques to find out where your representative is.
And then the final one of the tactics is coordinated calling efforts. And that's one of the things that the Democrats over the past few years have been pretty good at. We're not good at a lot of the other things. We don't turn out at non-presidential elections and vote. You know, we don't seem to have zeal for changing government that some of the people on the right have had. And one of the things that I think makes it difficult is we don't have the same degree of anger. We don't carry guns to demonstrations. Those sorts of things get attention. Peaceful demonstrations tend to be, you know, fairly ignored.
There can be sit-ins in individuals', I guess you'd call it, toolbox. But you don't ignore reality. You don't make up facts, you know. You don't threaten people who disagree with you. You don't physically assault people like the Tea Party people did. You don't shout obscenities or burn people. You're stubborn and consistent, but you're not violent and angry.
Polite is good.
You're as polite as you can be and be heard. So if you're talking, and Michael explained this, if you're talking and they come and try to take the mic away from you, just hold on to it. The picture of somebody getting videotaped yanking the mic out of your hand before your representative has answered your question is not a good thing to end up on YouTube.
Right, or turning the mic off. So we want to talk about, I want to first, you know, direct people that the Trump resistant movement is, there's a Facebook page. Go home and Google Trump resistance. You'll see lots of things. But Trump resistance is, for instance, one of the first things they're suggesting is a simple turning off your lights on the night of the inauguration. And believe me, the news will be carrying the satellite pictures if enough people turn their lights off on the night of the inauguration. So the Trump resistance movement on Facebook. That's the other thing I want to mention. Your Facebook, if you're not familiar with, if you've been avoiding Facebook, well, 1.6 billion people in the world are on Facebook. It is there are several resistance pages on Facebook, just like these guys talked about. Other people that wanted to were horrified at the prospect of a Trump administration began resistance movements almost immediately.
Some of them, Mike, are focused on a particular thing like protecting Planned Parenthood,
right,
or so forth and so on. These folks are talking about a general movement with a lot of principle, but they're talking about, and their argument is, and I think a lot of our progressive friends are going to maybe disagree with it, is to be pretty much defensive. Try to stop bad things from happening rather than trying to come up with wonderful new ideas. Come up with wonderful new ideas, but when you're working tactically, when you're working politically, this is a period for defense. There's a time for defense. There's a time for offense. And this is a time for defense for people who oppose the Trump agenda and repose the agenda of the congressional Republicans.
I want to go quickly through my so – what do you got, Gary?
Well, I was going to say one of the things that I think we could do – this isn't in this document is that the Tea Party was very focused on national debt and deficits. Remember how, you know, it was the whole thing was supposed to stand for taxed enough already. And already the GOP Congress is talking about that deficits don't really matter. The debt doesn't really matter. What we need to do is get things done.
We'll do a show on that, don't you think?
So why couldn't we go out and enlist the support of some of the people that were in the Tea Party to obstruct the very things that they obstructed Obama on?
The Republican powers that be are plutocratic, extraordinarily wealthy and well-connected. And they used what started out, and I think, I'm not sure I could be complete with the diagram, started out as a fairly spontaneous anti-Obama movement, an anti-Obama movement before he even had done anything, and was sort of co-opted. The Koch brothers and others poured tons and tons of money in it, reorganized it, got rid of the Tea Party leaders they didn't like, edged in their own people. But the document starts about how it starts, and what it's saying is, you have to form groups. You have to work with other people. I think anybody who's worked in business or government or been on a sports team knows that you have more influence if you work together. And in this case, the painful thing is the Republicans, the far right, we have a president who was elected with the help of a foreign intelligence agency. We've never seen anything like that. He was helped by a foreign intelligence agency, and so his legitimacy is in question. And I think that's why we see this, some of the erratic behavior. Go on, Gary.
Let's get back to the document. I was going to cover chapter one.
There is so much that
I'll do it quickly.
Is unprecedented. Please.
Yeah.
Okay. Chapter one again is.
Are you finished, Gary?
Chapter one again is grassroots advocacy, and how it worked with the Tea Party, and it points out that the Tea Party was, you know, locally focused. They focused on their members of Congress, but also on their state legislators, as Mike pointed out. The groups were small, local, and dedicated. They were relatively few in number. A lot of people think that the Tea Party is this large group. It's actually, you know, quite small. They were just very vocal and loud, and so they got a lot of notice from that. They used videos, at town hall meetings. If you remember seeing Ann Kirkpatrick walking away from a town hall. She was actually walking away because they wouldn't let her speak. They were shouting her down.
The sheriff asked her to leave because there was trouble. This thing, whole thing was a setup. It was brilliant. And I believe the sheriff was in on it. He said, look, they're getting really angry. They're getting agitated. Please leave. And so she walks out. They filmed that. And they used it against her to lose two elections.
Let's talk a little bit about Chapter 2, Gary. Move on a little bit to Chapter 2, because it's kind of funny stuff. And there's a chart that says what your member of Congress cares a lot about and what your member of Congress doesn't care much about at all. And your congressional representative cares about constituents. He is impressed by advocacy, or she is impressed by advocacy that requires effort. The more effort, the more they care, the more calls, the more personal emails, especially showing up as a person in the district, the more impact. Form letters, a tweet, Facebook comments, unless they generate widespread attention, your congressperson doesn't care about it. Your congressperson doesn't care what wonky New York Washington, D.C.-based press say about him or that kind of thing. He doesn't want your thoughtful analysis of a proposed bill. He wants an interest group's endorsement. So if he wants to get rid of Medicare and privatize it, or he's opposed to that, then you need to get the group together and endorse it. Not try to think through everything he should do, but get some people together and endorse it. Groups of constituents, locally famous individuals, big individual campaign contributors, the congressperson cares about. Concrete asks. So one of the things they're talking about is a concrete ask. And so you don't just say, I'm against the privatization of Medicare. You say, I want you to commit to vote against the privatization of a Medicare when it comes up on February 29th. So it's an interesting document because these people work for congressional people.
And there's different strategies for if you have a good congressperson or a bad one, somebody that agrees with you or not, whether you have a Tom O'Halloran representing you or if you have a Paul Gosar representing you. They're quite different.
There's quite different strategies depending on that. What they say is that the congressional people want to have desired good outcomes. They want to be popular. They want to be liked. They want the local newspapers to say nice things about them. They want a picture of them cutting the ribbon at a new bridge. They want information about being at a town hall. They don't want local newspaper reports that angry constituents strongly objected to Congressman Bob's support for privatizing Medicare. They don't like those sort of negative impacts. But we're running a little short of time, so I think I'm going to move on. Should we talk a little bit about Chapter 3? Chapter 3 is the techniques about how you form groups. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. If there's a group near you doing pretty much what you think should be done, get involved with it. But if there isn't, or if you're unhappy with what local groups, even if you agree with their politics, are doing, then you found your own group. And there's a detailed description of how you decide and form a group. And I don't think we'll go into the deal in that most of our listeners, folks, you worked in business, you've been part of all kinds of non-political groups, you know how groups function, and you can get a pretty good idea on your own about how to do this, and you can also check the document, and because what you're doing is a little bit different than what you've maybe have ever done before. But I think we should get on to Mike.
Yeah.
Talking about Chapter 4.
There's nothing here that isn't that is radical. All this it says advocacy. You're advocating for positions you agree with. That's not radical. The first thing you want to do is gather intel. Find out who your representatives are. Get their newsletter. If you're like me and you've been ignoring John McCain, hoping he'll go away, well, it's been 30 years, 36 years. I might as well take his newsletter so I know what to react against, so I know what movements are being made against Medicare
Flake, Senator Flake is coming up for re-election in 2 years, I believe.
Right.
And he's could be a focus of a lot of things, a lot of stuff, particularly, gosh, folks, 5 years ago we started trying to protect Medicare and Social Security and explain the issues. Now we're going to have to do it all over again. But Senator Flake is someone you can talk to about these issues or write to.
And right. He's one of the more reasonable senators.
Set up a Google alert. I have a Google alert on my name, and every time somebody Googles my name, I get a little email from Google. And so you can set up a Google
alert. All those mean things I say about you, Mike, you know about them?
There's a lawyer.
I thought you didn't know that.
There's a lawyer for what's left of the mob in Chicago, Michael J. Cosentino, and he comes up a lot, but that's not me. but I get those notices, and that's the whole point. So set up the Google alerts for your members of Congress so you can find out what they're doing and when they're doing and where they're doing it. A lot of the things you guys just talked about, town halls and meetings and things like that, set up the Google alert, boom.
You know the facts, Mike. Right?
You'll find out about it. So this is gathering intel for advocacy. And then just research Google and find out who's covering your member of Congress. Once again, this is your two representatives, your two senators, and your representative. Find out who's covering, what reporters are covering them, and follow them. Follow the reporters that are covering the people that you want to know about, that you want to, whose policies you want to influence. And so you can find out what's being written about those folks. These guys talked about going to town halls and listening sessions. Find out when your member of Congress is. Congress's next town hall is. Send out notices. The Tea Party was real good at the local Tea Party. They did this to great effect. They found out. They sent out local notices, and people showed up.
How do you find out how to reach your representative by telephone, Mike?
There's many, many, many ways. You can go to the Congress's website. You can go to your call me. Seriously.
I mean, a lot of people don't actually know how to do it. They've never called someone.
This is a radio
They don't know
station.
Where the phone number is.
I will get you the phone number of every representative you want.
The simplest thing is just to Google their name.
That's simple. You bet.
Okay. And I'd point out another tool that has come up in recent months is there's an app for your smartphone or a computer called Countable that asks your opinion. You sign up for it, and any bill that comes up before Congress, it will notify you and ask for your opinion. So you can vote, and your vote goes to your representative.
Real quickly, I'm going to go down this list. If you go to a meeting, get there early and get organized. Get seated and spread out. Make your voices heard by asking good questions. Stick with the prepared list of questions. Be polite, but be persistent. Demand real answers, unlike most of the corporate media. Don't give up the mic until you're satisfied with the answer. Keep the pressure on. Support the group and reinforce the message. Record everything. Number 5 says record everything. After the town hall meeting or whatever you show up to, after the public event, reach out to the media during and after the town hall. You'll see reporters there. Of course, this happens less and less as press budgets.
It does, doesn't it, Mike? I mean, there used to be much more coverage. It's expensive to send a reporter to places.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There are fewer of these guys out there now, folks.
Yeah,
but they are there.
I was talking to a city council person the other day. He said every city council keeps looking for reporters and not finding them. It's just cheaper and faster to do it over the phone. And then share everything. Share everything. Share everything on your Facebook page. Share it with your email group. Share it with the people you have coffee with in the morning. Share everything. The other we're talking about the opportunities for other public events. This is kind of the same. Let's be prepared to interrupt and insist on your right to be heard. optimize visibility. Now, there is a footnote here about carrying a sign. We already know that Trump supporters, we've already seen that they can get ugly. So whether to carry a sign or not, first of all, carrying a sign into an event, you can be prevented from getting into that event. So there may be times when you want to carry a sign. There may be times when you don't want to carry a sign. And we do care about your safety, and so do the people that wrote this. So we're talking about safety and privilege here. We know that Trump's supporters will respond to organized shows of opposition. But I don't know.
Even a really right-wing congressman like Gosar, who is sort
last
of
last two things for advocacy are in-office sit-ins, in-office visits. Find out where your, as Steve said, where your local member of Congress's offices are. If he has a local office, or find out how close it is, plan a trip to go there. Prepare several questions ahead of time. Politely but firmly ask to meet with the member of Congress directly. Note that office sit-ins can backfire. So be very thoughtful about the optics of your visit. The tactic works best when you are protesting an issue that directly affects you and members of your group. If you're in our age group, you have the Social Security concerns, Medicare concerns. If you're a member of a religious group, you may have concerns regarding that religion. Meet with the staffer, even if you're able to get one-on-one office meeting. You are most often going to have to meet with a staffer.
That's not bad either. Right.
Yes,
even
yes,
if you're talking to a congressional representative.
Advertise what you're doing. If you're going to the office, advertise it.
On Facebook and social media.
Once again, we're talking social media is the research will be pouring in for years. But as I said, 1.6 billion people on Facebook, it is the biggest tool for democracy.
Let me point out an opportunity to carry that sign that you were saying you couldn't get into town halls. There's a march coming up on January 21st on Saturday.
Speaking of Trump resistance.
1 to 3 p.m. It's in coordination with the Women's March in Washington, D.C. And it begins at 45 Birch Boulevard in West Sedona.
Right here in River City.
And I think it's a perfect time to make a sign. I've already made one up called Das Gropenfuhrer. And
we don't know what to say. That Mike looks totally perplexed by that, Gary. I mean, he really doesn't want to go there.
I like the cartoon where they have Trump standing, grabbing the crotch of the Statue of Liberty. You can put that on your sign.
Yeah, well,
so what it's saying is try to get to your member of Congress directly. If you can't, get to the staff members. Get to know them. Talk to them. Explain your position. Interact as much as possible with the people around a congressional representative to get your views through and your group's views through.
Mass calls. One of the people that wrote this document, Steve talked about congressional staff. One of the ladies that wrote this document was a staffer for a representative in Texas, Democratic representative in Texas. And she said they couldn't get their work done. The Tea Party, in the beginning, were calling all day with issues, with things that they were concerned about. And they spent their days writing letters, getting responses, and answering phone calls. They called after they were closed. They called. So if you have a rep, now the things are a little tighter, as you guys already mentioned, sometimes, but phone calls are more effective than emails. Find the phone numbers of your member of Congress. Prepare a single question per call. This I learned when calling the Arizona legislature members, a single question per call, especially if you get a hold of a secretary. You want to say, this is my concern. Please pass it on to the representative or the senator. Find out who you're talking to. If Isabel, his longtime secretary, is answering the phone, Isabel will give you her name, and you want to so you can say, I talked to Isabel. If you're directed to voicemail, then follow up with an email. We got to the end of this document, and now is when email is it's good to follow up a phone call or a visit. In the document, it shows where you can get Senate email addresses and House email addresses on the federal level.
It's called
a record of the conversation, and I'm almost done. Report back to your media. Report back to your local media. Believe me, as a reporter, you love this stuff. You get a story. Somebody local has contacted the representative about an issue that makes it a local story.
It's called Indivisible, a practical guide for resisting the Trump agenda. It's available on the internet in a whole bunch of different sources. It's printable out. It's 23 pages. It's a fairly simple document. We have a roundup, Mike.
If you're looking for a resistance group, I'd like to point out that you can come to St. Andrew's Episcopal Church on Sunday the 22nd for Doors, Democrats of the Red Rocks annual membership meeting.
Nice.
It's a great resistance group. The meeting's at 5 to 7:30 p.m.
Please, 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 your local Democratic organization is a great resistance group. In the document that we just talked about, in the Indivisible document, which you can find all over the web, or ask us and we'll send you a copy, they have sample questions. If you say, well, look, I'm not good on the phone or I'm not good in emails, great. There are sample scripts, sample dialogues, and you can follow that.
And remember that the representative represents you, too. So don't be afraid to call them and ask them and tell them what you want.
You're not doing anything wrong, folks, by contacting your representative.
Yes, that's right.
And tell them your point of view. They represent you. They work for you.
Your first job.
And so as long as you're polite, give them a call. Let them know your opinion. Try to talk to the actual representative. Try to find out who's on the staff. Talk to staff members. This is your right as an American. People have to step up as citizens of an indivisible republic with freedom and justice for all.
There's a lot of information here. You can find this show and all our shows on vvid.org. Please go to vvid.org. There's lots of information there. Some of this information, where to get phone numbers, where to send stuff, Trump-resistant groups. Michael Moore, by the way, that we say as we close here, is a great source for Trump resistance. Thanks, folks. VVID.org. Listen to our shows. See you next time.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.